The dawn of civilization. Primitive. Dangerous. Exciting. The handwriting is on the wall. If the human race is ever going to amount to anything, it needs...
the most civilized caveman I have ever seen.
Ah, look, he's come out of his cave.
Hi everyone, this is James from Cave Dweller Music. I have my co-host Brendan with me here today. And today we're joined by Bobby from the LA stoner psychedelic rock band Salem's Bend. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Anytime. Do you want to just tell people who haven't heard your music a little bit about the band, what you play and what you do in the band?
Yeah, for sure. So, as you mentioned, my name is Bobby. I'm the singer and guitarist, or one of the two guitarists for Salem's Bend. We're a heavy rock, you know, kind of psych, sort of stoner rock, you know, whatever you want to call it. You know, very inspired by, like, the 70s kind of heavy classic bands like Black Sabbath, you know, Deep Purple, Led Zeppelin, Thin Lizzy, you know, all those kinds of, I was like, you know, and like, I love all that stuff, like the obscure bands like Dust or, you know, Budgie is one of my favorites.
Nice. So yeah. Good choice. I love Budgie.
Yeah. That's the kind of stuff that, that we like. And so we try to make music in that vein, sort of inspired by that, but still with our own twist and our own, you know, something new to add to it.
Yeah. I think you definitely have like a really old school inspired sound, and I appreciate that you kept sort of the things that were best about that sound intact. But like you said, you have made it fresh and exciting. It doesn't sound like a worship album or like a worship band or anything like that.
No, it doesn't. That's what's like so nice.
Yeah, thanks guys. Thanks. Yeah, I try. That's one thing I'm always like very, almost paranoid about is like trying to, you know, make sure it's not, I'm not just like rehashing an old riff that, you know, that somebody else already made, like trying to bring something new and interesting, you know?
I imagine that's tough with this style of music though, because there's so many amazing bands in the period that did it all so well that so many riffs have already been covered.
Oh yeah. I mean, like they always say, you know, every like great riff was already written in the 70s. So it's hard to really come up with something totally brand new, but, yeah, it is definitely something I'm always thinking about is like, how can I capture that vibe, but still not sound directly like something else, you know?
I think that's important. It kind of sets a lot of bands apart because you get other bands that literally just straight up just make the exact same stuff. And like, I like this band, so I made another version of it, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. When you hear that song and you just think exactly of another song, you're like, oh, that's the riff from this song, then it's, you know, it kind of takes away from it because you just, now you're thinking of that other classic song or whatever, you know?
So right, you gotta
add something a little bit new and a little bit fresh or a little bit unique so that it's, people aren't instantly thinking of these old.
I think, what I love about your band is it's got that, like, quintessential style or like sound from that era, but like it's all original, you know? So like I actually end up like kind of humming like, you know, the Ride the Night song, you know, like you know, and like I'm just like, it's a good fucking tune, dude, you know?
Thank you.
So was this something that your dad inspired, like the music taste? Is this something you kind of grew up with him listening to around the house?
Yeah, so sort of. We didn't really listen to kind of heavy rock or anything in my house.
Okay.
But like, I think, you know, my dad definitely did listen a little bit to Led Zeppelin, like, and you know, he was into some of those classic bands from the 70s, but I didn't really hear them in the house. It was more kind of. My dad works in movies, and wow. So, like, we had a lot of movie soundtracks.
Okay.
That was really, you know, kind of fun and interesting to listen to as a kid, and then my parents were both into reggae.
Cool.
And then it was like, yeah, like that, and then, you know, just whatever was on the radio, and whatever my older brother would listen to.
Okay.
So yeah, I didn't really come across the '70s like kind of heavy rock stuff until a little bit later.
Okay, that was going to be my next question: is how did you end up coming into this and falling in love with it?
So it was from Iron Maiden. So, mm-hmm. My brother he's 2 years older. He went off to college in high school. You know, I was a junior in high school when he was heading off to college, and before that, we shared a computer. And so, when he was leaving, I bought my own computer so I could still have one. The music we had was just whatever he had downloaded. You know, it was downloaded from Kazaa or LimeWire. You know. Mm-hmm. and any CDs he had bought and ripped on the computer. So I just downloaded all his music, but there was one song I forgot to get, and it was this like techno version of the Phantom of the Opera theme, from the musical, you know, not the Maiden song. So I was trying to find that on Kazaa. I was like Phantom of the Opera, and I saw Iron Maiden, and I was like, I didn't know who they were. So I downloaded that song and I listened to it, and it just like blew my mind. I was like, what is this? Like, I listened to it like 2 or 3 times in a row, like immediately. And I was just like, whoa, this is crazy. So that I just started like researching them and then researching the bands that they were into. And that kind of led me to like the 70s guys. Cause you know, like all the 80s rockers, cite like, you know, the 70s greats as their influences, like obviously Sabbath and Deep Purple and all that kind of stuff. So mm-hmm. I kind of started with the 80s metal, and then I worked my way backwards into the 70s.
It's funny because I was like a little bit the same way. I grew up with my dad's stuff, so he always listened to like 70s prog rock and stuff like that. And I liked it as a kid, and then I never like kind of like fell in love with it, but once I got into like heavier stuff, like you said, I ended up coming back to that and re-listening to it and falling in love with it properly.
Nice.
You can't shit on the classics, honestly. Like, I never really heard anyone say like Dio sucks, you know?
Yeah. <No. laughs> Exactly. Yeah, it's just the best.
So how did you end up working with Ryan?
So let's see. There's a guy named Eric, the general for the Stoner Rock Army, if you've ever come across that on Facebook. And like he has a great group. We've been chatting on Facebook for years, and he was always trying to get us to come to Montreal because this is where he lives. And so last year he was like, yo, I want to make it happen. Like, I can connect you with Fred from Sons of Arrakis, who's their lead singer and guitarist. And because like he has got connections with Black Throne, or you know, I guess he's you know part of the Black Throne team. So then I started chatting with Fred, and Fred, you know, connected me with Ryan. And so it was like the three of us just kind of going back and forth, having calls every now and then, to plan a tour around here. So it was really, literally it was like a year. It was like a full year in the making.
Wow. How many shows do you guys have lined up for this?
So we have 9 shows. We were trying to get a few more, a couple fell through, and then I wanted to add a few East Coast US, just since we're in this area, you know, but, it was hard to add. I kind of waited a little bit too long to try to add those. And then, I was so busy with other things. It didn't quite pan out, but, I mean, it's all new places for us over here, so it's been, you know, we're excited about it.
Oh yeah, what's been your favorite spot so far? Your favorite venue?
Let's see, man. The the venue in Quebec City had like a really nice stage and great sound. That was really fun. But that was called La Antille, and but yeah, literally every show has been awesome so far. It's been great crowds. The people are, you know, having fun and rocking out with us. So that's all we can ask for.
Oh yeah.
So obviously you're touring right now. How's that been going?
Been going great. Yeah, we flew into Ottawa on Tuesday. Today's Monday. Yeah, we flew into Ottawa. We left Tuesday night, landed Wednesday morning, and we had a show that night in Gatineau, which is, you know, just across the river. And that was cool. I mean, we were like, you know, we got like 1 hour of sleep on the plane, so we were pretty tired, but it was a great show. Everybody was rocking out. Everybody was really nice. And, it's just been like great nights everywhere. We then went to Montreal after that. Montreal was awesome. It was like a packed house. That's where the Sons of Racus are from. So that's kind of their home base. That was a great show. We had some friends come through. Our drummer Alex. He's filling in for our usual drummer Zach. Alex's brother came by to the show, and so it's been really, really fun. We then did like Quebec City, and then Sherbrooke. Sherbrooke is cool. It's kind of a smaller town. We played with the local band there was called Occult Witches, and they were awesome. I mean, they were incredible. Just really shredding. The guitarist was like, had the tape licks. So that was a really cool show. And then last night, Trois Rivières, that was really cool too. It was like this tiny, very kind of small venue. Like kind of sort of in the basement, like lower floor of this building. And then the upper floors was like a kind of a band apartment where we got to stay for the night. That was pretty cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
Have you managed to have any poutine yet while you're there?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, that was one of the first things we did in Montreal, and we went to La Banquise to get some poutine, and it was great.
Nice. Yeah. That's like the thing, like poutine, and there's a couple other neat ones that are Canadian.
Yeah, and, Canadian club.
Yeah. So it was like all that funny, like is the poutine better there? Like is what's your opinion?
I mean, I think it's good. Like it was definitely like I had that many poutines. I had poutine in Alberta when we went to Canada the first time, and that was good. But yeah, maybe this one was a little bit better, I think.
All right.
There was more variety, I guess, of different styles.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing too. Is like, you know, you have the traditional poutine, but then I feel like there's just been so many like neat doctored up versions. Like,
yeah,
some people are purists. what have you noticed any difference between the Canadian crowds at the shows and the American crowds?
Not a huge difference. There definitely seems to be. I guess the only real difference is, in the US as well, but, people seem to be a little bit more like engaged, like the crowds, you know, they're kind of more active, like rocking out with us.
Yeah.
And that's cool. Like in Los Angeles, like, you know, people might be really into the music, but
don't want to show it.
They're not like, you know, running around or you know, starting a mosh pit. You know, like, I mean, yeah, for other bands they might, but you know, just like when we play our hometowns, it's not quite as people aren't quite as excited, I guess, you know, like,
yeah.
So I think the one thing that's nice about when we go on tour to anywhere, but especially to a different country, the fans are kind of, they're somewhat more, I don't know, receptive, I guess, because they're just like impressed that you would come all that way. Like, yeah, we had some people just sort of shocked that, like,
you're like out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, like in Sherbrooke, they're like, why are you here? Like, literally just asked why we're there, but not like in a bad way. Just like they're pleasant.
Yeah,
appreciative.
I think a way to think about it is like, you know, music's important. It makes them feel important, you know, and then, you know, so it's like there's a lot to that.
It's not just that though, like, because I can tell you as someone from Australia that what you said before really resonated, where people just don't get as many bands in other countries.
Right.
So the ones that they do get, it's really exciting for them and it means a lot. Like New Zealand, even more so. I grew up in New Zealand. Like New Zealand's even more so. Like, it's the end of the world, dude. It's like people don't come there. And then when they do, like, you go out of your way to see them. Like, I flew between the two islands to see a band once. Like, I went to the other part of the country, like, just because that was the only place they were playing on tours. Like, I'm going to see them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome, man. And like, there, we had a friend and a fan named Kevin, who's, I think he's in New Brunswick. And so he drove down to Quebec City, which was about a 7-hour drive, because that was like the closest we were getting. But like, that was really cool to see him there, because like, he was like, man, this is, you know, we haven't been anywhere close, because we're always just on the West Coast or kind of central U.S. So
right,
he's like, I don't want to miss it. So he drove all the way out, which was really cool.
Yeah, to him, it was probably like worth it. You know, he's like, when am I going to see them again?
Yeah,
right. Like, there's a bunch of shows that are in New York, and I'm like, oh, man, that's like a 2-hour-plus drive, you know, if I don't take a train. And then if I take a train, it's maybe 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
I got to, like, from the train station, I got to, you know, get to the venue and then all that, you know. Or if I'm driving, then I'm just like, you know, until I, like, I don't know. It's just, like, one of those things, like, I don't want to drive 2+ hours for a show and then like drive back home. You know what I mean? Like such a pain in the ass, you know?
So yeah. we're lucky because we live in Southern California. So it's like, if a band's going to tour, we're going to probably get them.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's why I think it's like, you get a little spoiled in these big cities, like, around the West Coast. Because everybody comes through there, and so like that. That's the other thing is in LA especially, there's just so much happening all the time. Mm-hmm. Every night there's like 30 concerts around the city, and there can even be the same genre happening. Like, even as small as kind of like the stoner rock or heavy rock scene is in LA, like, there still could be two separate shows happening. And so, like, and then mix that in with like movie premieres and like museum openings and art walks and all this crap. That it's like, you get so overloaded as, you know, living there. That's like, oh man, it's hard to get.
It's hard to decide what to do.
Yeah, like, it's hard to decide what to do. So then you just end up doing nothing. Or like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, I've been there.
Yeah, so it's a little bit like harder to get people to come out to the shows, because you got a lot of competition, and then it's just a little bit kind of like, well, there's a lot happening. I'll see them again, or, you know, something like that.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's like, you know, they'll be back, so it's like, I'll just see them next time.
Yeah,
but you guys have an awesome definitely.
That's true.
You don't know if they're coming back sometimes.
They could break up, you know, and then And then it's like, oh crap, I didn't see their last show.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Like, also, or like, you know, hey, something's happening and all of a sudden, boom, family event's happening and you can't skip out, you know, like, or something. You know what I mean? Like,
or they die. Like, the first time I saw Gwar, I was like debating because they were clashing with someone else. I'm like, no, I'm going to go see Gwar. And then like a week later, David Brockie died. I was like, okay, I'm really glad I managed to see that.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially like with like the classic bands from the 70s too, like the past, you know, what, 5 years we were losing all these music icons, so it's like, damn, you gotta see them while they're still around.
Definitely. That's why Yes came through recently and I was like, there's no way I'm not going to see them because I've never seen them, and who knows if they'll play another tour.
Yeah, exactly. Just got to do it.
Exactly. And it's not like they charge, like, most of them don't charge that much. Like, unless you're looking at, like, Guns N' Roses or Motley Crue or something like that. But, like, the older guys from, like, the 70s and 60s bands, like, they only charge, like, $40 or $50.
Yeah.
Which is not bad. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like, it all depends on your perspective, right? Like, the other night, I saw a couple of my favorite hardcore bands for, like, I think it was, like, in advance, like $20 or something silly, you know what I mean? Like,
right,
internet fees is like $9.99 or something, you know what I mean? Like, how's that out there for $30? Bought a couple beers, and then, I feel like if I went to the venue, I'd skip the internet fee, but like, I'm pretty much in the door for like $20. Like, you know,
yeah, right.
And then you can pay with $300 or $400 to see Taylor Swift. It's
like, yeah, I can see Tool. Like, I'd love to go see Tool, but like,
dude, they're overpriced. Like, they're so overpriced.
You know, like, you know, right? It's just like, it's kind of like, God damn it! Like,
Tool's charges like $300 for a ticket. I'm like, you're not worth that much.
Like, even the nosebleeds, like, you're in the back.
Yeah, right. That's exactly, great. And it's like a couple of $100 still for Tool.
Yeah, dang. That's wild.
I got tickets to see, it's in April. Do you know the Radio Shell in San Diego?
I don't think so. Not familiar.
It's like this big venue in the harbor that's like a big amphitheater built on a little island. And it's like all open air. It's really cool. But the lead singer from Tool, James Maynard Keenan, his 60th birthday. And he's got like all the members of two of his projects, plus all the guys from Primus, together for one show, and they're all going to play on stage simultaneously, all three bands, and all cover each other's songs.
That sounds insane, dude. That sounds wild.
Yeah, yeah, it's going to be wild. I'm excited to see how it plays out.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But like he charged like $90. But if you see Tool, it's like $300. I'm like, I'd rather, you know, like, I don't understand the.
Or unreasonable, I guess, right?
It's like a more unique show anyway, too.
Exactly. Way more unique. You get to see like all the cool guys from Primus, like Al and stuff. Like,
yeah. Oh, for sure.
Les Claypool.
Yeah.
Brendan, I know you have a bunch of questions lined up that you want to ask, so I'll let you jump in for a bit. I'm talking too much.
No worries, dude. Well, we already hit up some of some of your newest venue questions, but your hometown venue, what is it? And like, what's your favorite spot to play? You know, like, where is it?
So we're from Los Angeles, obviously. We're kind of spread out around the city. I live in Inglewood and, two of the other guys live in downtown, and then bass player lives in kind of Hollywoodish, but we, as far as a favorite venue, there's a few. Like, there used to be more before the pandemic, but a lot of them closed during the pandemic, and then they just haven't come back. Or if they did come back as a venue, it's like different music scene, and so it's. So like some of our favorite spots closed, but right now there's still some cool spots. There's kind of like our our old standby, you know, like our go-to spot that, you know, if people are coming through town and hit us up to help them book a show, I always recommend the Redwood Bar. So it's in downtown LA. It's kind of like a small dive bar. It's like nautical themed, so it's kind of, it got all this kind of cool like pirate stuff and like, you know, boat anchors, and it's really cool. It's a cool little bar. Like the booker there, Eddie, is like a really cool guy. And so we've played there a bunch of times. That's kind of like the spot, I guess, we always sort of, always like lead people towards who are coming, you know, coming through LA. But there's also another cool spot called Permanent Records. So it's like, it's a record store. And then they have, I guess what's called the Roadhouse attached to it. So it's a little bar and a music venue. So during the day they have, on where the stage is, it's just like more vinyl racks. But then at night they push them to the side and then it's a stage. So it's actually a really cool spot. It's, I forget the exact town, but it's basically just north of downtown LA. But that's a really cool spot. We just played there a couple weeks before the tour, and it's just a cool vibe because the record store is still open while the show's open, so you can go, you know, in between bands or whatever, you can go peruse the vinyl and stuff.
Oh, so yeah,
it's cool. It's a good spot.
Nice. Then, what's your favorite venue that you've been to besides your current tour? You know, like a place that you're like, all right, I want to get back out there.
Yeah. Good question. There's a few. We did South by Southwest a few times, and there's a venue out there called the Spider House in Austin. That's really cool. It's just like, it's kind of this like sprawling area. Like it's they've got two outdoor stages, I think. It's maybe even three. Right. Yeah, and then there's like an indoor stage. It's just like, it's really big. Just really cool vibe, and like, you know, got Lone Star for like $2 or something. So that's a cool, that's a really cool spot. But then also, another place that we really had a blast playing, and would love to play again was the Black Heart in London. We did Desert Fest London there in 2019.
Cool.
Yeah, it was super cool. And like that room, it's just like it's kind of a small room. It's probably maybe 200 people, max, but it was like, it was wall to wall, like packed for the show. And it was a great vibe in there. It was like, the sound was pretty good too. And everybody was rocking out. So that was a really cool spot. Oh, I got to mention one other place, it's just outside of Los Angeles. It's in Palmdale. It's about maybe an hour drive north of LA, and it's called Transplants. And the owner, Matt, is just like super cool guy. It's a brewery that's been open for probably, I don't know, 8 or 10 years or something, but he just started the venue part maybe 2019 or 2020 or something. And it's like, it's an amazing stage. It's a huge room. Like, it's like a warehouse kind of room, you know, so big high ceiling, great big stage. Yeah. He has a couple guys doing sound who are like really good. So like the sound is always really good. They have great lights and stage setup, and he's just like a really cool guy. So, and he loves kind of heavy music and all this stuff. So he's just books all of these heavy bands that are coming on tour through the area. So Transplants, that's a fantastic spot.
Right on. Hell yeah. So your song that you did, your cover song, Walk on Water, for Ripple tribute to CCR. Mm-hmm. I love that album. It's like, I feel like every band just did like a justice. How did you guys get linked up with that? Like, did they like say, "Hey, I want you to play the song," or you're like, "Did you like, I want to play this one," or how did that work out?
Todd, who's like head of Ripple, there's we have a kind of a private Facebook chat that's like with just the Ripple music bands and friends of the bands and like stuff like that. And so he'll use that sometimes just to like kind of more quickly disseminate information to all the Ripple bands. And so he just one day, like he had, I guess, been thinking of this for a while, like, oh, I wanted, it would be so cool to have like a heavy cover tribute album to CCR. And so he just one day posted on there like, hey, like if Ripple did a CCR cover album, like, what bands would be interested in this and like what song would you want to do? And like immediately it was just like everybody was just like, yeah, sounds tight. And they just were, you know, shouting out the songs they wanted to do. So I saw that message kind of late, so a lot of people had already claimed like, you know, some of my favorite tunes. And so I went back and I listened to their first album. That's probably my favorite from them. And so I listened to the first CCR album just to see, some inspiration. And I came across that Walk on the Water song. And so I was like, oh, crap, this is actually a really cool song. It's one I had forgotten about, you know, because they don't play on the radio, really. I was like, hey, this is it's a fun song. It's a song I feel like we can cover and do some justice too, and then it's also just a fun excuse to like have a 3-minute guitar solo, you know. Like the song is like it's like a minute and a half, and then the last 3 minutes is just like guitar solo stuff. So
yeah,
that was pretty fun.
Hell yeah. Yeah, that's sweet. Like I said, that album has been really great. So many awesome bands on it.
Yeah. Everybody did good.
Yeah. I think that'd be a pretty cool show, like a Ripple festival like that does all like the covers and stuff. Like
it'd be cool. That'd be super cool.
Yeah. So you guys popped out a new song recently. Is there a new album in the works? What do you got going on?
So we are working on new material. We haven't like recorded anything just yet. I kind of was taking a little bit of a recording break just because, my girlfriend and I bought a house and in 2021. And so I moved out of my old place, which was where my studio was. I had built myself a studio in the garage.
Okay.
Kind of like made it soundproof and everything. And so when we bought this new place, I've just been rebuilding the studio. That was taking me longer than I thought to construct.
Yeah.
So I was just like, you know, kind of like, I just have so many ideas for songs, and we have a lot of stuff we kind of workshopping, but the studio is now it's mostly done. It's done enough that we can use it. We've been jamming in there and practicing in there. It's you know, I still have a little bit of construction work to, not construction, but just like putting up some of the acoustic treatments and baffles and everything, but it already is sounding really good in there. We recorded a Judas Priest cover for the Glory or Death records. If you've heard of those guys, they've been coming up with these cool compilation albums. The first one was Thin Lizzy, and then they did a Deep Purple, And then they just, last year maybe, or I can't remember exactly, but they came out with the Judas Priest one. And so I was like, man, Judas Priest is one of my favorite bands. So I was like, please, like, let's do a cover. And my studio wasn't even finished. It just had drywall and, like, you know, there was like nothing in there. So I just kind of quickly threw in some baffles and wired in an outlet and, like, so we could record the drums and everything. And it turned out really nice. Like, part of the reason, like, I was spending more time on the studio was to make it sound how I wanted it to sound, like, to get, because, you know, as you know, listen to our music, you know, we love the classic 70s artists and that kind of sound. So to try to capture that sound even better, like, I've built the studio in a way just like with higher ceilings and just thought more about the actual acoustic environment so that, like, I can get that sound a little bit easier. Like, it's not as much of a struggle. So like for the Judas Priest cover, I recorded the drums and I didn't even barely have to EQ or do any compression, or I barely did anything. It just, like, sounded fantastic. So
nice.
So I'm excited because now, you know, it'll just make recording a little bit faster, a little bit easier. And we can hopefully come out with some more new music, like, faster. Because there's just so many new ideas I want to get out. But, you know, like, we just got to start putting them down.
That's awesome. Definitely exciting stuff. I'm looking forward to it for sure.
Nice. Thanks.
Yeah. I guess we got one more good one, or at least I think it's a good one.
I hope it is.
I forgot. I'm just kidding. Now, what's your favorite song to play live?
Good question. I think, I probably have two favorites. We always have fun with Space Duster off the new album. We pretty much play that every show because it seems to be one that people like, and then it's also fun for us to play. But then the other favorite is A Tip of Salem off the first album, which is like the last song on the first album. Because we usually, when we play it live, the ending of the song, sort of a slower kind of doomy song, and then the end, you know, it's like picks up tempo and it's like we start like guitar solo and it's like more of a faster tempo kind of thing. And so when we do it live, we extend that solo out usually by, you know, a minute or two. So it's like
that's awesome.
That's fun for me because I just get to, like, you know, just shred some solos and stuff. And yeah, so that one's really actually a lot of fun to play. We always try. We when we have time for it, we always try to include that one because it's just a good, it's a good kind of show closer, you know?
Yeah. It's high energy. It's like, it's a good one.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Well, I've got two more questions for you then. One is a bit of an ambush question, but we'll save that for last. So what, if anything, has stood out to you this year? Any albums that you've heard that are must listens?
That's a really good question. Trying to think of what I've come across recently. Let me think.
No rush.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that I'm project I'm really excited to like hear once it comes out. It's not fully out, but there's a band called Master Nasty, and okay. it was it's a project from this guy named Dylan, who had a band called Shotgun Sawyer. Yeah, so like Shotgun Sawyer is really rad. They broke up like 2021 maybe or something.
They have like this song, like it starts off like dude walking into a bar and blasts a shotgun.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fucking tough. I love it.
Yeah, so they're super rad. And so they so Dylan's new project is called Master Nasty, and so I think they have one single out, or maybe he just sent it to me and that's how I've heard it, but it's really cool, like just very like blues inspired, like heavy riffs.
Is a single called Run Through the Jungle?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, I guess the cover they did, he has the CCR cover on the Ripple compilation. But then even as another one, maybe it's not out yet. Maybe he had just sent it to me. I'm good friends with Dylan, and we were we'll share songs with each other. And he actually even came down to my studio last summer, and we kind of were like, you know, workshopping some songs for like a future album and everything. But he has one that's like fully done. It's ready to release.
Awesome.
He's just figuring out a label for it. But that's definitely like really exciting for me. Trying to think of some other, I know I came across something recently that was just really blowing my mind. I can't remember. I'll try to think of it.
Okay, I'll ask you the other question in the meantime then. So the other one is, I feel free to take your time on this one. If you were stranded on a desert island and all you had to keep you sane, I guess, is a solar powered Discman and 3 CDs on repeat until you got rescued, what would you want those albums to be?
Oh, wow. Okay. that's a good question. Definitely, one of them would have to be Black Sabbath's Paranoid.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just like, it's like my favorite album. Like I don't ever get tired of listening to Paranoid, you know. So that's like awesome. I feel like that's like one of the keys of the desert island thing is like you have to. You know, if you're stuck with that for on repeat, you can't be something you're gonna get annoyed with. And like, it doesn't matter how many times I hear War Pigs. Every time I hear War Pigs, it's just as exciting as like the first time I heard it. And like, I've heard it like, you know, I don't know, hundreds of times. But still, every now and then I'll hear something that I never caught on to before. Like maybe it's a little bass lick or some other little small element. You know, like maybe I'm listening to it in a different environment or I have a different set of speakers and I can hear, oh, like he did that little drum thing or something, you know? So like that, and that whole album is just, it's like my favorite. So definitely.
Yeah. No filler.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just pure fucking awesome rock. So definitely Paranoid. Let's see. Trying to think of what else would I bring. I might also bring the first Cadaver album, the self-titled one.
Nice.
Because that's probably my, like, Cadaver is probably my favorite band of the, you know, 2010s, I guess, in this genre. Like, they're just really, really blew my mind. And that first album, it's funny because I came across that on YouTube. It was just, that's where I find like a lot of my new music is just like browsing YouTube and it's like a recommended video, you know? So it's like that their album came up on there as a recommended thing. And so I started listening to it and it's like the guitar and voice is hard panned left and the drums and, you know, bass are hard panned to the right. And it's like, so it sounds so old school. Like it just sounds even really more like late 60s, like that kind of production style. And so it took me, like, I listened through it once and I was like, this is weird. Like, why did they do that? You know, it just sounds crazy. But then it was like something intriguing about it. So I listened to it again and I was like, whoa, this is really good. And I listened to it a third time and I was like, oh my God, they're amazing.
What's the name of their first album?
I think it's just self-titled. I think it just says Cadaver on it.
Okay.
But it's like the picture is like the three guys. It's with their original bass player, but it's like they're standing in a forest and they're, you know, their clothes are like straight out of like 1971 or something. Like everything about it looks like it belonged in like 1970. Like that album, I have it on cassette and I have it on vinyl and CD as well. So like whenever I'm in my van and I can't think of what I want to listen to. Like I'll pop in that cassette, you know, cause it's just always like a kind of fresh and exciting for me.
Awesome.
And then so one more. A third one would probably be, I'd probably bring like the Bee Gees greatest hits or something. Cause like something to liven the mood up. And so I could like, you know, if I'm going a little crazy, I can just like dance around this desert island to the Bee Gees.
Yeah,
there's something about the Bee Gees I just love. Like they're just, I love the disco, like, it's just so fun and like kind of
high energy.
High energy. Like it's kind of over the top and ridiculous, but like, like in a cool way. Like, I don't know.
That's Parliament for me.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Funk, old school funk is just so energetic and like upbeat and fun.
Yeah. I love funk. I love all the, like classic funk bands and like, but yeah, I even love the disco bands. Like they're just ridiculous. But like, yeah, something about like those Bee Gees songs are just so well written. They're very well crafted. Those like harmonies and everything are just something I just like about them. So I'd probably bring that just to keep me entertained. You know,
it's a good spread. We get some people on like all three of their albums are like extreme metal. I'm like, I like extreme metal too, but I think I need something like else I had to listen to all of it on repeat
to cleanse the palate, you know.
Yeah, just to kind of exactly
change your brain waves a little bit.
Anything can't be like crazy slam metal the entire time, you know.
Three slam albums.
No
three,
way
three grindcore albums totaling 15 minutes.
right
yeah, right. That's funny.
All right, well, that kind of brings us to time. But is there anything that we didn't cover that you wanted to cover, or do you think we kind of got it all?
No, I mean, I think you got it all. I guess the only thing I would talk about that maybe I didn't mention before, I mean, I kind of mentioned this in passing, but like... I do all the recording for our music myself. So like the first album I did, I actually recorded it by myself in my garage studio. Like I play all the parts on it cause I didn't have a band yet. So it's like, I'm doing the drums, the bass and the guitar and singing.
That's awesome.
Thanks. Yeah. But like, I didn't want it to be a solo project. I wanted to make a band. So, I put it out. I presented it not as like, you know, a solo thing. I presented it as this band, Salem's Band. And then, you know, it's kind of went from there. And then, you know, I found these, the cool guys I'm playing with, but, Yeah, so like second album recorded with these guys, Kevin and Zach. Kevin on bass, Kevin Schofield, and Zach Hewling on drums. And so yeah, I do all the production myself.
That's pretty sweet. That's pretty impressive, man. But I love like the opening track on that one, Balthazar.
Oh yeah, thank you.
Yeah, Balthazar, Black Blood. Yeah. Yeah, that's good, man.
Thanks. Yeah, what's I guess kind of interesting about that album was I didn't really intend to make an album. I just was I built my studio and I was trying to dial in my recording techniques to try to get like the sounds I wanted. And so in you know, at the same time I'm trying to dial in sounds and figure out how, you know, try to get better at recording. You know, I'm still like writing songs, and so I'm like, well, I might as well like test out a song, you know, test out some sort of new miking technique or new recording technique with one of my new songs I'm writing. So each song I kind of used a different microphone or recording technique just to kind of testing out. So it's really like each song was like a recording test, but at the end I was like, hey, these are actually like good songs. I might as well like make an album out of it. And so like I recorded one more track to make it like a little bit, you know, just to fill up the time, and then I put it out as an album, and then I just kind of like snowballed from there. Like Todd from Ripple, he heard it because Bucky, there's a guy named Bucky who's on Bucky Brown, he's on just Bandcamp all the time. He's like a Bandcamp hero, and he discovered his new artist and he sent it to Todd at Ripple, and he was like, hey, you should check out these guys. And so Todd thought it was cool, and he then reached out to us about,
I think Bucky's in Doomchart. He's a Doomchart contributor. Yeah, as well, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah,
he's I am too, Doom by Charts, the way. Yep.
Oh cool, nice. Yeah, so yeah you know Bucky then. Mm-hmm. He's a great guy. But yeah, so that was that. And then the kind of funny story was like, so Todd reached out to me and was like, hey, you know, you want to sign for like a vinyl release and distribution deal for this? And so I was like, heck yeah, man, sounds cool. Like I took a little bit of time to read over the deal and make sure. So it actually was like, I was a little bit like, I didn't like sign right away because, you know, you hear all these horror stories of like bands signing away their rights and all that stuff. So I really like scrutinized this whole contract and like showed it to some people and stuff just to make sure. Because like, I mean, now I know it's like Todd's a great guy. He's not going to write a contract.
Of course, but you don't want to like
sign away your music
and then all of a sudden you can't do anything again. You know?
Yeah, like, and at the time, like, I didn't know who he was, so it was like, I got to really do my due diligence here, but yeah, so then, we signed the record over, and he pretty much, like, immediately was like, hey, I got this other band from the East Coast, Kind, they're like a super group, you know, of other cool bands from that area. They're like in the Boston area, and he's like, they want to tour the West Coast. Like, would you want to tour with them to be like their, you know, support group and like, you know, provide the gear and everything with them? And so I was like, heck yeah, man. Like, I just said like, yes, immediately, but cause I didn't tell him I didn't have a band yet. I just was like, yes, I'll do the tour. And then I was like, then I had to figure out how I would make it happen. And then I was able to.
Was that Kind who did Close Encounters? That was that album from like 2000, I want to say 13.
Yeah.
With a really cool album art.
I think it's 2015 because that was. But oh yeah, oh, maybe, okay, maybe the second one is 2015. I'm not sure, but yeah, they're on Ripple. They have like this cool kind of spacey.
Yeah, like the space cowboy post-apocalyptic sci-fi future thing.
Yeah, and so our first ever shows was that tour with them, and because you know I had never been on tour before with any group, and so that was like, that's obviously like the dream for any band, and so I wasn't going to let the opportunity pass me by, you know, just because I didn't have a band. So yeah, it just kind of has gone from there. I found Zach on Craigslist. I just put out an ad, like looking for a drummer, you know. And, Kevin, the bass player, has been he was my roommate for a long, long time. We had played in other bands together, so he was kind of the natural go-to. But yeah, then, you know, it's just kind of, we've been going since then. That first album was released 2015 at the end, like just in December, December 23rd. It's like, that's a terrible time to release an album. I was trying to get it out before the end of the year, because that was my New Year's resolution, was to finish this album. So I was like, it's got to be done. But like, it was a good thing Bucky heard it and then passed along, but because December 23rd is not a good time to release your album. For anyone who's listening and wants to release an album, don't do that. But yeah, you know, it's just kind of gone from there.
How fucking good.
Awesome. Well, last thing I want to ask before we wrap up is, sorry, my dog. The last thing I want to ask before we wrap up is, for anyone who has to listen to your music or support the band or buy anything, what are the best places to do that?
So the best place to buy the music and support is either on our Bandcamp page, which is, you can actually just go to salemsben.com, and that links right to our Bandcamp page. Also on the Ripple Music Bandcamp page, or their own Ripple Music website. They have some of our CDs and stuff up there. The vinyl and everything is sold out, but it may get repressed at some point. And then obviously like future albums, but yeah, Bandcamp is really the best place mm-hmm. to support. And obviously, you know, but really just if anybody, like, we're just happy for anybody to listen to us on any platform. So we're on all of them, you know, Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, all that stuff. So
great. And yeah. What about socials, if everyone wants to keep up with you guys?
Yeah, we're on Facebook, Facebook/SalemsBend, and then we're on Instagram as well, just at SalemsBend. So those are our two main two socials that we use. We're posting on there regularly. And, you know, I post all our upcoming shows, and, you know, upcoming events and new songs and everything on there. Those are the two best places to kind of keep track of what we're up to. There's a band, you can use Bands in Town. A useful, because I always try to be good about putting our dates, our tour dates on there, so that
great,
you know, that way, like, if we happen to be coming through, you know, you'll get a notification. So that one's kind of cool.
Awesome. Yeah, people need to use that more. I always forget myself sometimes.
Yeah,
you know, you mentioned it and I was like, you know what, like, I see that email pop up every now and again and I'm like, I really should utilize that.
Yeah, it's pretty useful. I kind of forgot that I added bands that I like on there, because I mainly just use it to add our own shows. But every now and then I'll get an email from them and it's like, hey, this group's coming through, you know, next month or whatever, and I'm like, oh crap. So it's kind of like a helpful reminder. It's kind of a cool site.
That's great. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and taking the time to talk to us. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks so much, guys, for having me.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
Yeah. Good luck with the rest of the tour. I hope it will go smoothly.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, thanks so much. We're nice. Excited. We're having fun.
Good. Have some more poutine on us. And for anyone listening, thanks for tuning in, and come back next week. We'll have another guest for you.